actually involved in the community action. So we try to focus on this because this is the community-led actions and actually led by the women's group, and the women are basically the housewives. So they are not involved in all the activities, or they are not the income-generating ones. So the housewives, they themselves did this action, so we tried to focus on that. So what this talks about is, as you all know, Nepal is a seismic, Nepal is a, lies in a seismic area. So basically, the main problem they identified, it's an urban poor community. So the problem they identified was the houses, the vulnerable houses, and the threat of earthquake. So the one point they tried to focus was on the non-structural mitigation of the houses, because structural mitigation, it will require more amount of money, more technical expertise. So at least start with some small initiatives to be prepared for the earthquake. So this group was, NZ gave a training on non-structural mitigation to this group in 2012 from one of the project. And after the frontline, once the frontline was like implemented in that community, the group identified the local action can be the non-structural mitigation. And there was already a group who was trained on this non-structural mitigation technique. So this group took forward the non-structural mitigation activities, and they started from their home. They started this non-structural mitigation, like fashioning the TV, fastening the fans, the wall frames, the small things that will actually may harm during earthquake, which may fall and harm during earthquake. So they started with that, and now the women are so much capable of doing those mitigation work themselves that they have started, they have advocated and lobbied with the school management committee, and they have started working it on their own on fastening the carrying out this non-structural mitigation works. So so far they are doing the process, and they have like fashioned the 10 schools, have done the activity in 10 of the schools in that community, and they are being called by other communities also for that work. And it's not that only NSERT is facilitating this effort, but once they are once their capacity is built up, other organizations are also kind of leveraging that their practice. So the other organizations are also taking them and involving them in their communities to do that work. So this is a kind of this initiative has been started, but there is a very long way to go. So a small thing has been started. And this kind of this women's group are now trying to replicate it in other communities also. They are training the community volunteers of other communities also. Maybe tomorrow we'll be going to one of the community. So tomorrow, the field visit tomorrow would be the new community where this women's group has just gave them training on that, and they have just started to implement that. So we can see on that side also. So this whole story talks about the initiative of the women's group in the community in the non-structural mitigation work. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, some comments on this. Of course, I'm very familiar with NSET's work, which has been a model for us in Asia. And so some of it is colored by my previous exposure to NSET work. But again, just focusing on the case study and the questions that Teddy had shared. So this is an excellent example of how women's groups have been mobilized to look at earthquake mitigation. Very unusual. And so maybe just one comment that the subject could be more specific. Instead of saying enhancing resilience of communities, I think we could say women-led initiatives on earthquake safety, which is much more attractive as a title. But I think in terms of what new ideas, the whole approach of educating, you know, and learning process as part of your intervention with communities is something very interesting. And at the same time, taking advantage of the fact that women, you said, constitute more than 50%, because men folk move out from the villages. Therefore, giving the charge to women on an aspect that is, you know, traditionally men driven is very, very interesting. Also, you know, earthquake safety as a topic is very difficult to reach out to communities, because earthquake may not happen in one's lifetime, you know. So this case study uses the example of non-structural mitigation, which are small things you can do, and low resource kind of investments, so the communities can easily take it up. And so, one suggestion here would be that you should perhaps explain the importance of non-structural mitigation a little more. Saying, for example, that big earthquakes happen like once in 20 years, but small earthquakes keep happening, you know, every year or every 2 years, especially in the Himalayan region. And therefore, non-structural is very good for protecting against injuries. So people generally think that earthquake is about collapsing buildings and, you know, people dying. But actually, a lot of injuries and harm is also caused by frequent earthquakes. And so this case study has captured that aspect. So how you can do something which is much more regular, daily kind of risk, and then you build on a case for a larger mitigation exercise. So that is very interesting in this, and I learned that. In terms of differences, I think the whole bit about how do you translate technical information, which normally engineers should know, to ordinary housewives, you know, and most of them, I guess, would be very limited, you know, not very literate. You know, maybe they know basics, but obviously not engineers.
Yeah.
You know, so how do you deconstruct science for people is something that, you know, I know NSET has been doing this great work in all their work, but in this case also it has come out very strongly. What would you like to know more about this case study? I think in the beginning of the case study, you have mentioned a lot of threats and issues around, you know, what are the challenges. And one challenge which is common with Pakistan and Cameroon is this fatalistic attitude, which you have also mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That people think it's nature's act, so we can't do anything. So that is also one, expectation from this case study as to, did you see any change? You know, did you? I mean, it won't be a big change, but at least in the perception of people, that it is something that we can take charge of. You know, it's not fatalistic. Disaster is not something that is nature's act alone. You know, it's the human activities. So that is one question. Then, what suggestions? So here, in terms of suggestions, I feel that, you know, in the beginning of the case study, you have already listed out what you plan to do. So you said, for example, you will be having go bags, household kits, non-structural. So this is NSET's own learning from many other case studies. But I believe that sometimes if you really want to make it community driven, then you have to be a little flexible. So this flexibility was something that, you know, is a suggestion to you, that instead of already deciding what you want to do with the communities, you should allow some space for what community wants and how they would like to shape their actions, you know. So One example which one can do is, rather than, you know, like you mentioned that you you've already shown demonstration, but maybe you could keep a small pot of money at the disposal of the community for these women groups and let them decide how do they want to do non-structural mitigation in their own community. So they may come up with some new ideas, you know. So that bit would be a suggestion. And related to that is also a greater involvement of adolescents and youth. If women are involved, then children get involved very easily. I feel that while you have focused on schools, there are adolescents which are not necessarily in schools. So they will be in the age group of 15 to 25, depending on, you know, how you define it. UNICEF defines it 14 to 20 or whatever, but that age group, you know, the teen. So when they are out of school and perhaps they are looking for jobs, and these, from our experience, adolescents and youth have great energy. So if we can really harness that energy for our purpose, then especially if women are involved, then that is an energy can be tapped. Understanding local, but yeah, so I think that's basically it. We have to be, I mean, this is something that all of us need to be aware that sometimes, you know, and that goes back to the title also, we try to think that, anticipate too much change from one initiative. So somewhere we have to be very conscious of the scope of our projects and to what extent we can bring about change. So that's why I wanted to suggest that the title Enhancing Resilience of Communities seems too ambitious, considering the initiative that you have described in this case study. So, and also, you know, likewise, you have given too many challenges. I don't think we will be able to address all the challenges through this intervention. So, I guess we need to be a little realistic on this. There are some common learnings from Uganda, and that maybe you can share later.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
I just want to add, like most of the important concepts we discussed with the other guys. So, like, what I want that I could stress is like the interesting part of the case study that focusing on the recognition of women's group in the program. And I think that is very important that, like, in cases where there are single mothers. Yeah, I think it is good that they can be able to work like men too, so they can fit what is not there for them. And also, like, the program stressed that or stated that there are more opportunities for women's employment. So instead of if they lack the resources or materials for doing handicraft or other things for income generating this kind of work, and still be the income generating for them. And like some of like the challenges are just like such as this, like with working with schools or children, I think it would be like such, it's only a such a suggestion, like developing like simple pamphlets where like women outside for children can meet and also can be able to learn and also work with the women in times of like disasters like this one. But the only thing that like just curious to know, like if women are doing this, like, and they are not to be like, why they need to be like in homes with like doing mother's job, care for children and the family. So if they are doing this, what the selection of the men in this kind of program? Are they very supportive of this or?
Family, you mean?
when
pain made of family.
Support of the family, are they getting the support of the family as well?
I mean, the support of the family in practical terms, but you're also saying the moral support of men in the family.
Yes.
It's a slightly different.
As Gupta mentioned, the women's initiative is really great. You mentioned that the driving idea behind this was the role that women play in Nepal. They buy houses, they buy furniture. This is new, actually. So I agree with you fully that it should be highlighted in the title of the question you bring to the offer. Otherwise, I have one question and one suggestion. The question is, how do the men form, the husbands of these women, support the action that women are going to have to do every day, part of their traditional role? Okay, that's the question. And the suggestion ties in with what Gupta said. One possibility would be, because you mentioned in the case study that one of the barriers is the people who construct the house, the fear that their rooms would be destroyed. Is it possible to use women of those people, of the architect, of the house owners, to pass through the women of the house owners and say, I know that the middle class, those who build houses are not the class of the people who suffer every day. But you can penetrate that group of women and tell them, to tell your husbands that the architects who are doing the design should, engineering, that is, they construct the science as you mentioned, make provision for when you put a fridge in the house, the fridge should be fixed somehow. Okay? If you look at this from the engineering point, I don't know how, I'm not an engineer, but this would be a way to make this sustainable from the design perspective. And then the other thing is how much of earthquake precautionary measures are actually included in the school curriculum in Nepal. Looking at the location of Nepal, Pakistan, India, vis-a-vis Himalayas and the formations, comparing to Japan, for example, which are within the same tectonic environment. How much of amount mentioned in the morning that the Nepalese society has existed for about 2,000 years? So they must have some traditional ways of dealing with earthquakes. So how much of these traditional ways are you incorporating now, and how much of the earthquake survival tactics are you teaching in schools and at what level? Thank you.
Mr. Chu?
Yes.
Is one question for you? Because you say you are an architect.
Thank you.
I'm a civil engineer, so not perfect. But you are a woman.
Yeah.
So do you think because you are architect and woman, or woman and architect, your approach is different from with your colleague, male? To work with a family with a woman in the house, or do you think it's the same approach, or what sense is different? Thank you.
I'll start, and she's also working in the same working within the same project, so she will add more on this. So basically, thank you for the very good suggestions. We'll surely incorporate that We also, when we look back in our paper, we also felt that we had missed the non-structural, the importance of non-structural mediation work. So in the revised version, we have added a table of why non-structural mitigation, because it's doable, it's low cost, everybody can do it. And in case of moderate earthquake, if the structure is not damaged, then only the, if it can, there will be loss of life or even injuries due to the falling of objects. Those can should be taken care of. So we have added a table on that part. So yeah, thank you, Manisha, for that suggestion. And yes, it is a very slow process. It is a very slow process because getting the social change is not an overnight process. It takes a lot of time and continuous engagement with the community. It's not like one time you go there and make the and have the training and tell them to do that. It's not like that. We have to go there time and again and convince them on the feasibility of the process, and it should be a long-term process, and the continuous follow-up is required on that. And even with this community also, there was our continuous involvement in that. At first, it was like when they took the training, they were not, actually even after taking the, actually doing it, they were not particularly convinced on if we can do that or not. They were not that, but once they started doing that in their home, from their home, then their confidence boosted up, and even their family members also, at first, they just took it very lightly, what kind of trainings and what are you doing with these kind of stuff? It's not, it shouldn't be done, what sort of things you go out and learn. It was kind of that kind of thing in that with the community. But once they started doing and they formed a group and they started doing in their home and in their neighbor's home, their friends or relatives' home, then the family members started accepting that, something is done, so it can be done. So it was a very gradual process, not an overnight process. So gradual follow-up and it's a gradual process, so follow-up is required, yes, it is. And and actually, one thing that we got to know is we did the implementation, a kind of demonstration, and the community took up the process. But still, unless and until there is the system is owned by the government or the local government owns the system, it cannot be sustainable, because the groups will do only in their some houses, in their relatives' houses, but it will not be a sustainable process. It will not be a long-term process. So it has to be owned by the local government. So now our next agenda would be the advocating the local. We did a kind of advocacy with the local government at that time also. But during that time, there was no elected representative in that community. So it was difficult at that time. But now, since after this local election, we have the elected representative. So maybe, hopefully, it will be easier now so that we can go there and advocate the local government and at least have a system in the municipality to have the buildings, the non-structural mitigation activity work in the buildings. So it has to. There has to be a system to be a to have it in a long-term process.
Okay. Thank you, Manisha, for pointing the rationale of taking this case study, and not only this case study, the initiative that NSAID took, particularly with women in the communities. When we talk about this earthquake, people think about infrastructure, big buildings, physical houses, and people think that it's very much technical thing, and there's a lot of social this aspects is associated with it. It's most of the time is forgotten. So that's how NSAID thought that, okay, this could be the one of the studies. So we started around about 2014 also. So it's only 3 years that we have started this one. So it's not in terms of DRR, it's not a very long time as well. And as everybody, and particularly in this South Asian country, the fatalism towards DRR, it's also, Nepal is not an exception. I'm thinking all those things is durable, taking the involvement of women, the role of women they are having at present in the house, like buying furniture, looking after the house, placing the furniture within the houses. So the role of women is very much involved with in that one. So we thought, why don't we start something with this woman? Because they are all housewives, they are mostly not literate one. So we thought of doing this women's network. So we are not, the one more aspect with this case study is we are not doing with the individual woman, but we are working with the network of women. So this kind of, we are working with the umbrella of this network. So they have many women's group in that umbrella. So that's how we thought of scaling up in the long term. So if we deal with one women's network, so we can reach out to the more women's group. So that was one of the approaches that we took in this non-structural mitigation. And as Nisha said in the beginning also, it was very difficult to convince the woman itself, like they were not convincing, and as the socialization process that actually this non-circle mitigation measure involves like drilling, holding of drill machine, whether that's that one, so they were also hesitant like to hold, are we able to do this one or that one, because basically that is regarded as a men's work. So it was very difficult. So we tried first with some theoretical part, then with practical, we provided some on-the-job training also. So, and that's how they got this confidence on it, you know, after doing this technical, this on-the-job training. And the most important part is, first they started from their own home. So in the beginning, first, they were not convinced by themselves, and it was very difficult to convince the men or the family members to get the support. So we had a lot of challenges like in the beginning. But fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know, this 2015 earthquake, it was a kind of a test for all of us. We started it before the earthquake, and the non-structural mitigation, it was a kind of tested example after that earthquake, because those whoever have this fashion, they fix all this non-structural lights, fan, for this gas regulator, cylinder on the frame, it didn't fall, but the rest of the things, they fall. So it was kind of was a testing ground for us also. So that's how it was easier for us to convince this thing. And yes, now the question about, do you see any changes now? The family members, they also said, go to the meeting and go to that committee. Why don't you do in your friend's house? I've seen their friend's house, so why don't you go to that relatives? So this is the comments this women's group, they are getting from their husband, male members, and all the family at the moment. So perception that it has definitely changed after the after this earthquake. And we do had some this flexibility about this go bag and other things, and we also give some kind of seed money to this woman. So, and like, to go back, we are dealing with it. It has certain standard, so everything is there. But they have developed another type of go back for the household, because this we give to the professional organizations and whoever wants to those organization, and they have like very simple bag. The bags they have thrown by the school children. So that bag can be used as a go bag itself. So they came up with that idea. So this go bag is expensive. We cannot have this go bag in our community. Why can't we put these items into that go bag? So that's how, and they are keeping those type of go bags in the community.
Thank you.
So that's the flexibility that they have come up. And the idea that the tapping the adolescents, the energy into, that's a very good idea. We have been able to tap only the women's group, but definitely, this will look into it. And about the question raised about the self-employment or income generating with this DRR activities. In fact, we have already this integrated this DRR activities with the income generating activities. Now the women, they sell this go bag. So, and they earn. Initially, what we used, when we talk about the go bag, the people and the organization working in Kathmandu, they used to ask, why don't you provide go bag? You are talking so much. So we started assembling the things and selling the go bag at cost to these organization. And later on, when we started this thing, now we are linking this women's group to those organization. And once they request us about the these go bags, then they will provide them. So they get the money for that. And even the non-structural mitigation, so in the beginning, so if I think I need a non-structural mitigation at my house, I invite them and I paid for that. So that's how, and these women's like, they do it not on a very in a formal manner, like 10 to 5 office hour or something like that. They finish their household job, they take to the children to the school, they bring back to the school, and they organize, and whoever is free, and they prioritize that, and they schedule themselves, sir, who is going where. So that's how they are working now these days. So you will see the example tomorrow. But so as everybody said, this DR, it's not a, like it's a dream, but it's an initiation, and we believe also that step by step, so we'll reach somewhere. So in school also, yeah, we have. And the suggestion to linking with the architect and this thing, women's group. So we are also, we have not started working, but we are thinking of these also. And we are taking those communities, women's, to just to share this experience in different communities, in schools, and in different organizations, that how the work, how the initiation, how this non-structural mitigation had worked during the disaster, during the earthquake, and like people believe more to them rather than us, like when they share their real story. So that is the one. And one, the curricula, we had recent, I don't know exactly how much it has been incorporated, but it has, the curricula, it has been revised recently, and we have been just given the responsibility to incorporate about the disaster, the challenges, the mitigations, and so it has been done in the curricula now these days in Nepal. So you find
what level?
In school curricula, in throughout 1 to 10, right. 10, right. 10, right. 10 level, right. But right. To what extent it has been incorporated in that, well, I'm not aware of that one. So I'm coming to your last question. Yeah, being a woman, I do things a little bit differently. Because when I used to, when people consult about, they ask me for house design or something like that, I always ask, bring your better half, the woman, in the discussions, because they are basically managing the things. Because generally, there's a kind of labor of work within the family also. Male is regarded as a breadwinner, though the situation is changing. And women, they look after the houses, they arrange things, they look after the children, and the older citizens and these things. So, and they know how they work, their lifestyle, because they, even in Nepal, the male members, they don't cook food and they don't know where to keep things, where are the things. So the entirely the house, the inside management is totally the responsibility of the woman. So that makes them easier later on when after this planning or designing a house, when it has been much more convenient, because this is the way we work at house, the flow, that's what they said. So it's a kind of combination, being a woman and being an architect. I'm trying to bridge these two things. So I guess. Thank you so much.
So may I have one last question? Very short.
Yeah.
You say all these programs, women groups start before 1 year before the earthquake.
More or less, yeah, 1 and a half. Yeah.
After the earthquake, this such program could receive funds from donors or not. I mean, the international donors, were they interested by such program with a non-structural mitigation with a woman group or not?
Yeah, we have received very few.
So far, the focus is on reconstruction process, so more of the fund is
reconstruction,
houses reconstruction.
Your project, your intervention is really excellent, really excellent to work with a woman. Why you need to work with a woman inside the house for many reasons. So, as a long-term prevention, the donors should be interested by such a program who directly where needs to have intervention. Okay, reconstruction is one thing, but this, so such program get more recognition or not.
But in that
not
part,
from us, but from people who are speaking.
Yeah, but it's despite of being a very good program appreciated by all, we have not been able to get much fund or the money for this particular day, because again the earthquake is it's about the houses, so about the reconstruction, so all is focused on, as we said, it's all focused on that aspect, physical thing, and not on these things. So that is one aspect, and another aspect is to be honest, we have not been able to bring this into a big media or something like that. We have done this and this because, so that one part is, we feel that we are lacking behind, and just to, yeah.
I'm just interested to know how your intervention has impacted gender relations within the family, whether the tensions between the male and female have gone up or as it was before, because my own experience is that whenever women are empowered, there is some resistance and violence as well.
But in this case, there's no it has been more cordial and more supporting. That's what we found, because they are also a little bit money, even 100 rupees, it's a big thing for this thing. And we have Father's Day and Mother's Day, it's very, because I was very much happy when the woman said that this time I bought some gift from my own income. So, and I could buy of my own choice. So that was the expression they gave. So it was very much this thing. And they were also supporting because they know, because as I said, this earthquake also showed, and they used this go back, they also used during the earthquake also. They took out the items, this medicine, and they distributed to the community members when they were living outside the house. So that also helped them, the family were supporting, and even community realized that, okay, this is, it's a good thing to do. So I don't think it has.
Yeah, the family is supportive, but again, being a housewife, being a mother, they have to finish all the household chores, and then only go for time work and separate time for this. So the females, the women are managing time accordingly. And for us also, it's not like we go there and set a time. It's not that easy. So we have to adjust according to their time. So it's been like that. It is difficult for other new women or new members. It will be very difficult, yes, for convincing them. But once they start doing the process and the families involved in that, then it will be a mutual cooperative process.
Do you have any data regarding the female and male deaths percentage in the earthquake?
Yes, we do have. So what was the percentage of women? The female are, as you, like in other parts of the country also, it's greater than the male.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that. It's greater.
Is that related to the time of day the earthquake?
Because of
no, because what I've seen is you have, you know, if you have a nighttime earthquake, you have completely different statistics from a daytime earthquake, and the women are in the house in the morning rather than the afternoon, so on. So there are changes depending not on gender, but on
occupancy of the house. So the time was, it was Saturday, and it was like, because Saturday you only have late lunch, so women will be busy in their kitchen, so
because of that, it matters. Bad time for some groups within the family structure, like lower children death.
Because there was no school, the schools were closed.
I mean, I must say that the comments have captured much more richness than the case study has, you know, so the comments are very useful, you know, and this should be really incorporated in the narrative.
Yeah, we have data also, comments, number of them. So while reviewing this, all this case study, we realized that we missed so many things in our own case studies. So that was our realization.
I think that's really interesting, though, is that you commented about some of the case studies so far. Some are very long, some are quite short, some are quite economical with information, and some plenty. But in fact, generally, my feeling has been that they tend to be reticent in bringing out the stories, the non-technical, scientific information that actually could be exactly what catches the attention of our hoped-for readership, so people to feel that this is, these are lived experiences. And somebody said earlier this morning, this isn't just a journalist making it up, it's something that's real, and I think to learn or to know how to write that sort of material is not necessarily an easy skill, because some of us won't necessarily have that background of writing like that, or you know, finding how you illustrate it. I found an interesting difference in looking at some of the case studies where there were quite a lot of photos, which already changed one's perception to what extent we can go down that route in the publication next year is one question. But when Terry says we're going to look at different ways of publicizing these experiences, and they are experiences in the broadest sense, we have all the scope we want to have. We want to illustrate using whatever means we have, including children's drawings, photographs, anything. But that brings it to life, because I think the bringing it to life is important. It's like, I'm not picking particularly, but when people said to me last week, why are you going to Nepal, what are you going to do? And I tried to explain, this is about Ruiti's story about the crabs coming on land and eating the lettuces. And this is, just as a little image,
yeah.
It's not what you normally read about in these sorts of documents. But you think, oh, yes, this is something different. And there are lots of things that are different in say, most of the case studies.
Can I just add in, I've been sitting on the sidelines listening, particularly raising questions in my mind from what you've said, to which I don't have answers. I'm just going to mention these now, because maybe some of them we'll come back to. But at coffee, we were chatting about how the two case studies we heard first were from island contexts, and there seemed to be a benefit there, a small is beautiful benefit. It seemed that the possibility of collaboration, partnerships, as Guillaume said, you know, is this based on conflict or collaboration? We heard a lot about collaboration there. And I imagine some of you saying, oh, I wish things were like that where we were. So that raises a question. How do you create that sense of small-scale cohesion which enables those partnerships? I don't know, that was a question that came from looking at those two case studies together. And then after coffee, several comments were about situations where community members are, if you like, either just fatalistic, someone mentioned, or even destructive. You know, you mentioned people moving into areas alongside the streams in Islamabad and Akka, the same in Lumbay. And why, you know, at a superficial level, why would people destroy their own environment? Why do they block the watercourses up, which causes obvious problems? And one, you know, it feels like there's a sense of fatalism there, and then that leads on to, you know, can we create citizens' forums? Well, how do you do that where people are very poor and they don't have the time to devote to that? So again, there's no forward movement there. And then I think it was interesting in the Nepali example that I think you mentioned something about having to work constantly with people. And you're talking about women who have a particular perception that we don't pick up an electric drill. And then you said, fortuitously, in a sense, after the earthquake, people saw that these non-structural measures worked. And so that developed some confidence. And so, you know, there seems to be an underlying thing that starts with the people themselves of why are people in this position of powerlessness, fatalism, almost self-destructiveness, and what are the processes that can move them towards positive engagement. So that's another theme that I saw there. And then someone said, all of this is slow, you can't expect much change from one initiative. I've seen that many times in the work I've covered. You know, I remember going very early on to an African village, very excited about seeing development in action. The development officer was there, and I said, "What? You know, show me development here." And she said, "Well, there's an ox cart there." And the fact they got an ox cart, which meant the farmers could ship their maize in from the farm fields, was progress. But it was a very tiny bit of progress. So you know, how do we cope with the fact this is all so slow? There's another question, and then there's this problem of people not understanding DRR. You know, we seem to be hearing that governments don't understand DRR. We heard, you know, okay, the focus is on reconstruction. We heard that the focus is on the large-scale response, you know. So how, you know, and then we hear the same thing about struggling to educate people at school level, at university level, in communities to see that DRR is important. You know, raises a question, is DRR saleable? Are we trying to sell the wrong thing? Or if we're not, how do we get over that hurdle of trying to sell it? I'm not offering any answers, but I just think that we see these themes emerging. You know, we saw the kind of positive sense of cohesion in Kiribati and in the Philippines. That was something quite attractive. But how do you mobilize communities when they feel fatalistic, in despair, powerless, so poor they don't have the time or energy? How do you manage processes which take cycles of time? The women picking up the drills, first of all, didn't want to, then did in their own homes, and then gradually developed a sense of empowerment and capability. That's a long-term process. How do we shift the focus from response to preparedness, to disaster risk reduction, to resilience? And have we acknowledged how difficult it is to get people to get there? Or do we just assume that they ought to get it? So those are just some things that I've locked down that I will probably bring back to the meeting.
Yeah. I was interested actually in, Manu, you said, you know, changing the name of your paper to bring it closer to what was actually going on. And I think it's interesting that we talk about disaster risk reduction when other language versions of the same thing. We talk about resilience, which means almost nothing. And we use these labels that aren't particularly strong selling points. And they're not selling points locally. And they don't appear to be very good selling points nationally or even internationally. So if in Nepal the money still comes for reconstruction. But this is the time when it should be coming for prevention. So that there are some still the same fundamental problems. Well, it's quite past a month. It's pretty good. Yeah, we're running late. Yeah, now an hour's lunch. So.
Thank you, everybody. The first day has been designed to be a focus on working through a lot of these case studies, so it will, in that sense, be quite hard work. But I think it's been really interesting and thoughtful contributions, and we're looking at two more in the afternoon, and then there's a different kind of focus. I've got the agenda in front of me, so correct me if I'm wrong then. Rita Acker, who is from this organisation, is going to be talking to us about a particular process of community strengthening empowerment through community foundations and community philanthropy. So that will give us an interesting perspective.
I might just sort of add this in the package that Claire put together. She added two short pieces on case studies that are going to be submitted to the process coming from elsewhere.